to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live at richarddugan.com, newspress.com. We are also rebroadcast on Sundays from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and we are also archiving these programs, each and every one of them, at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. We encourage you to check out the various resources. Go to the links that we have to our hosts and check out the information that they have available for you. And I think you will be astounded at what you will find. Quick Angus update for those of you who are interested. For those of you who are not, my apologies, but I'm very excited about it because he's been with us for 10 months and 11 months, 12 months, almost a year. December 22nd of 2012, he was born. The day after the end of the world, ladies and gentlemen. And what a great gift he was to us. He's got to be sporting 90 pounds.
Richard, are you still there?
I am still here. I am still here. And we are talking about Angus, who is sporting 90 pounds and is basically a big dog, still a puppy, still has that mentality and having a great time. So for those of you who are interested, there you go. That's the update. And we'll move on now with the program here on Tell Me Your Story. Again, it is New Paradigms for a New World. And on a regular basis, we do bring healers onto the program, people who are making a difference not only in their own lives, because the healing process in and of itself can change even the healer, can help the healer, because you sort of become the conduit, so to speak. We are never as healers. I am a third-level Reiki master, and so I know well enough that it doesn't come from me. It comes through that energy and certainly is there to assist and help and support other people in their transformation as well. And today is no exception. We have with us on the program Peter Bedard, and he is an MA and a CHT. Peter, thank you for joining us, and MA sounds like a medical assistant. I have a funny feeling it's not it, but what is CHT?
Well, MA is a master's degree. I have a master's degree in consciousness studies, and that is the combination of, it's kind of an interesting, it's a newer degree. It's a combination between quantum theory and theology. So that's my master's degree. Now, and then CHT just stands for Certified Hypnotherapist.
Now, fascinating. We're going to talk about both of these, but I want to go back to your PhD, your master's, which is one level, is that right, below PhD?
Yes.
Because I've never gone in that direction educationally, so I have no points of reference. But congratulations on one hand, because I am associated with people who are seeking out that higher education. They are wanting to know more. Consciousness, what was that again? A master's in consciousness?
Studies. So that's the title of the degree program, Consciousness Studies. But it's just a bunch of letters.
Sure, I understand. But the study itself is fascinating to me, because we had a program not too long ago with a professor of philosophy, Mark McIntyre, who's been on the program before as well, and he is right out of Santa Barbara. As a matter of fact, teaches at City College. And we were talking, of course, you know, about the various aspects from his perspective as a professor and teaching philosophy to his students and critical thinking. And we got to the point where we were talking not only about Descartes, but also Desjardins in terms of this aspect of consciousness. And the reason why this is relevant to our conversation today, from my perspective, is because it is a higher consciousness that we are sort of, we're striving for. I mean, I posed the question directly to him. I said, with everything that's going on in the world, and to you, Peter, I say as well, I'm not advocating annihilation, mass annihilation of the species. But why is it important for the human race to continue on? I mean, why continue to propagate the species when we really haven't grown in thousands of years? We're still doing the same silly dance. And there are many of us, yourself included, who would like to dance a different dance.
Well, you know, I think we're nearing that tipping point. Yes, we still have a lot of the same problems that we've been experiencing for about a couple thousand years, but there's more and more people. Now, if there was somebody like me 500 years ago, I would have been burned at the stake. And now I'm talking on your radio show. Mm-hmm. So there is an evolution that is happening. There is a tipping point that is being reached where more and more people are coming into this place of a greater awareness and expansiveness. It hasn't quite caught on in the political levels yet in our country. And I think that's part of the backlash. I think there's a lot of people that are jumping on the bandwagon of a more spirituality, more of a knowing, more of a greater awareness of the human condition and an evolution of thinking. But you do have these people that are resisting that, change, that are fighting it even. And again, like if I would have been doing what I was doing, say, even 1,000 years ago, I would have definitely been burned at the stake. I would have been, you know, called a witch or whatever. And there's a group, large groups of people. In fact, the majority of the population would have fought in that way. And now that tipping point is happening and it's getting reversed. You're getting more and more people that are on the other side now that are understanding that there is more out there. There is a wider sense of understanding that there is the world isn't black and white, and that there is so much gray and a wonderful space for everybody to fit in. So yes, we haven't changed a lot in a couple thousand years, but at the same time, we're getting really close to that tipping point.
Well, I realize that this sort of goes counter to, you know, the whole higher consciousness aspect, but I want to grab some of these people who are resistant by the scruff of the neck and say, will you please wake up? You know, we want to, you know.
I would say that's a good thing. Grab them by the scruff of the neck, slap them around a little bit. And, you know, absolutely. Sometimes we need that. The only way most of us change is when we're in pain.
I accost you in Jesus' name, so to speak. You know,
maybe you can find out a way to do that lovingly.
Yes,
and a way to do that is in mind of a higher consciousness.
Yes,
you know, so absolutely, your program sort of does that. I was listening to one of your previous episodes, and you really do that. You know, people have to tune into it.
Well, true.
You pretty much call it like it is.
Well, one of the things that I find interesting, and I remember hearing this analogy, you know, basically from time to time throughout our lives, you know, God will, with all love and compassion, smack us up upside the head with a 2x4,
yeah.
and say, hey, you know, what the heck do you think you're doing? This is not, you know, this is not part of the teaching that I gave you, the learning that you took in. By the way, that's another aspect of this too. And that is that as you grow, as you raise yourself and your consciousness and your awareness and so forth, it is next to impossible to go back because you become responsible for what you know now.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't turn away from that. And you have taken on, some very compatible, just in the two things that we've mentioned, obviously consciousness studies as well as hypnotherapy. And that's an interesting, I'm going to call it an interesting dichotomy. And the reason is because on the one hand, we have free will. We have the freedom to do what we want in this life. We can go anywhere we want, do what we want. There are those of us, myself included, who years ago, outside of the realms of religion, came to the conclusion that either my life has meaning or it doesn't. If it doesn't have meaning, then I can go out and rape and pillage and plunder, and it doesn't matter because this was all an accident. Or my life has meaning, ergo, this was not an accident, and I need to figure out what it is that I'm supposed to be doing with my life.
Mm.
Now, you seem to have found that which you are supposed to be doing. How long did it take you from the time you came to this earth through your mother's womb to determine, this is my life's path?
Well, it took me getting hit upside the head with a 2x4 quite a number of times. I got a lot of bruises. the universe really smacked me around. So, let's see. When I was a child, I was very tuned in, as I think most children are. And then I learned that my experiences in the world weren't safe. And so I learned that who I was or how I was or the feelings that I had or the concepts or the thoughts I had didn't fit in with a lot of people's knowing of the world, and I had to shut all those down. So I did that for a long time, and in that process, I had a lot of injuries. I had a lot of things that happened to me that I had to heal myself of. So, you know, I was slammed into the back of a semi-truck when I was 17, and I died in that experience and went down the tunnel and all that kind of stuff. And that's a whole other story on itself, but I had to learn how to walk again. I cracked 5 vertebrae. I split my wrist open. I lost all the nerves in my hand. I had fibromyalgia and arthritis and asthma and bronchitis and sciatica and anxiety and depression, and I had somewhat body dysmorphia issues, all that kind of stuff. And those are the things that I really look back on now, and I say, you know, God was smacking me upside the head, and he was, and God was telling me, hey, pay attention. This is important. Your life does have value. What are you going to do with it? And so it took me a long time to figure out what I was going to do with it. I was very lost. I had lost the career or how I knew how to be in the world when I was in my accident. I was intended to be a dancer, and that was taken away from me. I shattered my knee. There was no way I was going to go back to being a professional dancer. And so I had to find my way. And part of that finding my way was really the healing. I call it the gold in the garbage. The garbage is all that past. The garbage is all that crap that happened to me, all that pain and all that stuff that I had to heal. And the gold is that now I can talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've healed those situations. And since I've gone through that healing, I can be witness to other people that so can they. And that creates a tremendous amount of compassion and empathy and ability to support others in my own life. And that led me to my work in my master's degree and in my therapeutic work. I primarily focus on addiction and anxiety, compulsive behaviors now. And because I've been to those places, I can help people find their own gold. And that then feeds me. That becomes my gold that I can then share even more. It's like a never-ending kind of experience.
I'm curious, touching upon the aspect of compulsive behaviors, and obviously we could run down several of them. I mean, smoking, drinking, you know, maybe excess. I don't know where you would classify or what the gauge would be for excessive sex, but I mean, anything can be, I guess, a compulsion. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, do we all, every single human being on the planet, have compulsions, or are there some of us who are pretty well balanced out? You know, I don't lean too far this way, and I don't lean too far that way, and I don't go nuts with this or that or the other thing. I'm pretty well balanced. Or the opposite, as I mentioned, we're all nuts.
I think very rarely do you come across somebody who doesn't have some sort of compulsion, and they may have learned to either let the compulsion go. Or they, like right now, I have no compulsions in my life. And I've never had an addiction issue. I'm very lucky in that. But I was surrounded by people who had addiction issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't necessarily myself have a compulsive behavior, but I was getting in relationships with people who were compulsive and who had addiction issues. So maybe that was my compulsion.
Maybe
that was my thing.
Yeah.
But I do notice that my brain is in itself addictive, and I pretty much think everybody's brains run on an addictive pattern program. So that addictive pattern might be obsessive thinking, might be obsessive worry. I classify worry as an addiction.
Well, I don't know about you and your heritage, but my Irish heritage says I'm supposed to.
Yeah,
I'm supposed to worry. And obviously, those are some of the messages that I know you have to deal with and help people to work through, because they aren't true. I mean, certainly that may have been the characteristic for maybe generations,
sure.
But it doesn't have to stay that way. And I think that's one of the keys. And it also brings up some of the phrases that we often use. The one in particular that I don't recall using a lot, and I don't think I've ever used it I don't think I've used it recently, but I never used it much anyway, to explain away my behavior by saying, well, I'm only human. It's like, what the heck is that? You know, it's like, I thought being human was a good thing, you know, and to say, oh, I did this bad thing. Well, I'm only human, you know, and I think that phrase is used by people who don't have a good feeling about themselves.
Yeah, I think it's used in a combination. Definitely, it's people who don't have a good feeling about themselves. It's also used as a way that people sort of justify getting away with something. Mm. And primarily, it's the victim.
Yeah.
It's that part of them that is using that as the excuse for not taking responsibility. I'm only human, meaning there's nothing else I can do.
Yeah. Growing up, as I did in this industry, at a religious station, I used to hear all the time about people who did this or that or the other. And, of course, it was the devil's fault. And
right.
And I thought, well, wait a minute. Either you're responsible for your life or you're not. You're not a little pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not. And that was always the example that was used. I thought, you know, how is it you don't see that? That either you did this or you didn't do this. You don't blame it on someone else. You always, in spite of how much... Oh, what's the right word here? I want to say influence, but maybe coercion is another good word, because this happens all the time, whether it's coming from the television and or movies and or radio, advertisements, schools, churches, your parents, etc. Regardless of where it comes from, you know, we're given all these messages, you know, and I'm going to use the word coercion. But we're still ultimately responsible for the choices that we make. And that's why on this program, we try to provide as many choices as possible, even those that some people have never heard of, or even those that they have, and say, look, did you know that we could actually go to the left instead of to the right, or straight up the middle, or maybe even turn around and go back the other way and then make another turn down another road?
Yeah.
Who said it had to stay this way?
Yeah. That's a very good point, because so many times, you know, when I'm working with my clients, they often come to me because they got locked into that way of being, that stay this way way of being.
Yeah.
And they only have that one concept for knowing who they are in that state. And they use that excuse of the, you know, the devil, but it's a devil inside. And that devil inside is really just a very frightened person that just doesn't know what to do, feels overwhelmed, and has no idea how to create the wellness or the healing that they really want. And so we use that excuse, and we don't take responsibility. You know, part of my healing and the process that I've come across, that I just labeled convergence healing because I wanted a way to be able to talk about it, is that first step of that healing process has to be taking responsibility. And if you don't do that, you're never going to fully heal, because you're always waiting for someone else to heal you.
Mm.
And so in that taking responsibility, I say to my clients, I say, I'm going to say this to you as loving as I can. And it becomes difficult even for me to say this sometimes, because I even get so caught up in that other person's story of their pain and all the atrocities that have happened to them. But I'll say, as lovingly as I can say this, I want you to know that I don't care about all of that stuff. I don't care that you were raped or you were abused or you were tortured or you were molested or whatever it was. You were slammed into the back of a semi-truck like I was and somebody killed you. I don't care. What I do care about is you. And what I do care about is being there to support you in taking your life back and creating the wellness that you so deserve, that all of us deserve and can have in this life if we choose to claim it.
Mm. Yeah. And that is a real key to really moving forward. I mean, we all are talking on this program about coming up with those new ways of living, but it's going to be tough for anyone to take that on if they're still stuck in some of the old ways of living and or thinking, the messages that we have been given over the years. And it can be very difficult, I think. I mean, I I can't tell you how many programs I've been through, a little, you know, personal, you know, intensives, you know, 3 to 5 day intensives over the mid 80s into the 90s, right. Up to about 97, 98. And I enjoyed them. I met some incredible people. And I think that was one of the greatest lessons that I learned in terms of relating with other people. I remember walking into the first few, because I began to realize that every time I did this, this mental judgment, it made it even more difficult when I went through the programs. And so I figured, you know, I really don't need to be doing this. I would start prejudging the people who I hadn't even met yet as I would look around the room based upon their physical appearance.
Yeah.
And those that I wanted to associate with throughout the 3 to 5 day intensive, I didn't. And those that I didn't want to associate with, I did, and actually became close, good friends.
Oh, good thinking. Very good thinking.
And so, I set that aside. I said, okay, you can't walk in here anymore, you know, doing that. That's just it. First of all, it's counterproductive. I mean, yeah, certainly I learned a great lesson from that experience, but I needed to go in there with a different mindset of, okay, what am I going to work on about me today?
Yeah.
Or this weekend. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to get distracted. And I'm sure that even when people come to you, they find ways. Well, you were saying before, you know, you're saying that they will tell you their story. Well, we all have stories about our trauma and our drama. And I'm taking it from what you're saying that that's not really what's important.
Not at all. Those stories are fun and they're entertaining, but they really are some of the things that keep us locked in to our pain and locked into those shoulds that you were describing earlier. Those stories can be your worst enemies. And when you walk into a workshop like you did, and I liked a phrase that I heard once was taking off that expert's hat.
Mm, yeah.
You know, I'm just going to walk into that workshop and I'm going to be open to receiving whatever it is that is worth, not even worth, because that's a value, whatever it is that I need to learn from this experience, I'm going to experience. And I'm going to talk to those people I wouldn't necessarily talk to, and I'm going to put myself in those places, because that old thinking pattern that says talk to these people, don't talk to those people, that's part of that addictive brain. That's part of that situation that we want to stay in our place that is safe, comfortable, and familiar. And in safe, comfortable, and familiar, we stick to all of our old habits and our old pains because we know them well.
Hmm.
And you challenged that when you walked into those rooms and you said, you know what? I know my old habits and my behaviors. I know the people that I would feel comfortable with. I know the people I wouldn't feel comfortable with. I'm going to take off that expert's hat and I'm actually going to walk over and get to know the people I don't feel comfortable with.
Well, what was even more of an interest in wanting to get to know them was it was literally, you know, it was based upon the physical appearance.
Yeah.
And there were women in the group that I wanted to get to know because of their physical appearance.
Sure.
Thinking, who knows what could happen here, you know,
yeah,
and, you know, I was still young at the time and so forth. So, you know, those kinds of things may or may not happen. And I have to say that I went through my very first one and I remember making an agreement in that program not to have any kind of relationship at any level, especially physical, with any member of the group until, what was it, like 30 days after the course ended. And I figured, oh, no problem. I can do that easy. I think I was 21, and I was not married, thinking, and I never had, you know, I never had a bunch of dates and girls and this kind of thing in high school. So I figured, oh, this will be easy. That's a no-brainer. Sure, I'll agree to that. And what happened was I ended up connecting with this one gal near the end of the program. And unfortunately, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, we didn't wait the 30 days.
Right.
And I didn't die. You know, it wasn't like, you know, didn't grow a third arm or something like this. And that wasn't the threat. But it was more to let the energy sort of settle a little bit before you got into these kinds of relationships, because you were sort of in a bit of a euphoric state just from the program itself.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. I know that we tend to do that. And I mean, like, for example, when people go their separate ways, the next person you meet is really not the person that you're going to want to stay with, because that's what do they call it, the rebound kind of thing.
Rebound.
Yeah. But that happens like in job situations, sure. You know, where, you know, you were in this incredible job. You were in this unbelievable place. And then you get this other job that is just, it's like a torture chamber. And you can hardly wait. And finally, you get out of there and you move on to the next job, which again is, and I had this happen where I went literally from the most unbelievably dysfunctional family in the work environment to the most accepting and loving. It was like they had just, I walked in the door and it was like open arms. Come on in. Oh, it's great to have you here and blah, blah, blah. And it was a great experience. No question about it. It was like, that's what I needed. Mm-hmm. But we don't always get that.
So no, let's, and it depends how clean you walk into that environment. But go ahead, you were saying?
Well, that's why I want to go into this issue of hypnosis, because we make all these different choices based, obviously, on a lot of the things that we've had in our past that we hold on to and so forth. So how do you use hypnosis, hypnotherapy? What is the process, if you will, that maintains that individual's personal responsibility, where you're not sitting there, okay, now when I count to three, you're going to forget all of the bad stuff, and now you're going to just live a wonderfully loving, productive, and healthy life. One, two, three, snap my fingers, and boom. Because it's sort of like you've just taken their choice away, in a manner of speaking.
Yeah, well, I've never done that. I call that the magic wand approach.
All right.
Wave my magic wand, one, two, three, you're healed. I don't quite do that.
Okay.
But I like it. I mean, it'd be great. You know, hey, you know, I'm sure there are instances where those types of things have worked. I certainly have had instances in my practice where a couple things come to mind. You know, one, I had a guy who had, I think, 11 years of insomnia, sleeping maybe 2 hours a night for 11 years. Ooh. And who, after one session, had, you know, was able to sleep through the night and get a good, you know, 7-8 hours of sleep with no problem, and has been doing that now for quite a long time. So, you know, every now and then you get somebody who's just ready to no longer do whatever it is that they were doing. So I've had that happen with addiction issues. I've had that happen with pain issues. I had one woman come to me who was addicted to painkillers, and she was addicted to painkillers because of the extraordinary amount of pain that she was in. And we were able to actually, and I'm sure you've had this experience with Reiki, we were able to actually go into the pain, figure out what the pain was doing for her, mm-hmm. and let that part of her body that was stuck in this loop of thinking that the pain was a positive thing, because that's not a conscious thing, it was a subconscious thing that body felt it needed to keep doing, and it was serving a very high purpose. And when we let the body know that it no longer needed to do that, and she could get the same results by doing something different, the pain went away. And when the pain went away, the addiction issue went away. And that happened in, I think, two sessions working with her. One session, we kind of knocked it out. And the second session, we were able to just sort of lock it in the new behavior. But I think we need to go a little bit back to what is hypnosis. So hypnosis is really just a expansion of awareness. It is learning to listen to what we would call maybe the subconscious or the unconscious or the part of us that we are not necessarily always aware of. You can call it intuition, whatever it is. But when we learn to listen to that part, and I think hypnosis is very much like meditation and spiritual practices. When we listen to those parts, we can create great change. And so hypnosis is something that we naturally do pretty much every day. So if you've ever driven your car from point A to point B and not remembered the drive, you've been in what we call hypnosis. Hmm. Your subconscious mind wasn't in the car anymore. Your conscious mind wasn't in the car anymore, and your subconscious mind was driving the car. So in that moment, maybe your thoughts were obsessing about a story, a person, a place, a thing, something, you know, somebody said this, how are you going to respond to them? You just got in an argument, you got to strategize something, whatever it is. And you're not in the car anymore. Your consciousness is off somewhere else in that conversation. And your subconscious mind is driving the car. It's often the experience of, let's say you work a 9-to-5 Monday through Saturday job, or Monday through Friday job, on Saturday, you get in your car and you intend to drive to the grocery store and you end up at work. Because the subconscious mind had a pattern of behavior of driving to work that was the dominant behavior. And the conscious mind wasn't in the car, it was thinking about something else. So instead of driving to the grocery store, you drove to work. And you've had that experience before?
Well, I've had similar experiences. And I at first, when I realized that it happened, when I started driving, and I've only been driving since I was 38, and I'm 53 now. But I've had that happen bicycling, when I used to bicycle everywhere. And it was really strange because I would look around going, how did I get here?
Exactly.
And the reason why it's scary is because, you know, when, at first blush, I'm going, if I can't remember how I got here, even though I did get here and I got here safely, I wasn't totally aware of what I was doing. I was not focused on the task at hand of driving whether, or bicycling, whichever the case may be, because both are dangerous because you have cars around you either way and higher speeds in the car. And so that first that's what first hit me. And I thought, okay, well, let's not – don't beat yourself up too much, because you did get to your destination safely, which does mean that there is a part of you that was focused on the drive.
Absolutely.
And that I would have to say that is probably the only kind of multitasking that I can accept in people and in myself. And I've seen the statistics. There have been studies recently. I don't know if you've heard about these, about multitasking. The level of productivity in the various tasks plummets. Plummets. So here where I work, we have a rule. Only serial single tasking. That's it. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to multitask. Because, again, you know, there are enough errors made in our daily process. We don't need to add another encumbrance, if you will. But I get where you're coming from. And yes, that has happened to me. And the other thing that's happened as well, and I want to touch upon more of this as far as the convergence healing that you have in a book coming out the spring of 2014. But I also want to touch upon this issue of another experience in transporting oneself from one location to another and having these promptings, but also having these deja vu experiences where I've been here before, but there's no way in this lifetime you could have been here before because you've never been here physically before. And then the promptings that actually turned me around. Literally, I was on my bicycle going to work, and I had just crossed one of the intersections, still heading in the right direction, beeline for the office, and it was like it wouldn't go away. And I'm not kidding you. I had traveled a half mile down the road. I turned around, went back, and I made that turn that took me out of my way from going to work. But I will tell you, I felt better, even though I don't know why I did it. I just did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I call that our higher consciousness.
Okay.
So the way I work with my in the work I do for myself and with my clients and the workshops I teach, there's a higher consciousness, there is a consciousness, and there is a subconsciousness. And they all work together. So in the case of addiction, the guy that's sitting at the bar getting blitzed out of his mind, that higher consciousness might get to say, hey, buddy, maybe we don't need to do this anymore. And it's that voice that we often drown out. Some people call it the voice of God, and I do believe it has a spiritual source to it. But it's that voice that says to us, you know what? Maybe there's another choice you can make in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you had that voice come in and tell you to take this turn and go another route. And when we listen to that, it's super important. Now, when you talk about deja vu and stuff of that sort, there are so many different possibilities out there. Some of them sort of practical and scientific, and some of them very esoteric. You know, it depends how far you want to take it.
Right.
You know, you could talk about past lives. You could talk about braided lives and walk-ins. You can talk about just all of the super conscious. You can talk about just sort of a hyper subconscious. Yeah. The subconscious in itself is that part of us that is always aware and always listening. It's kind of that part that maybe on that drive noticed something at some point and said, don't go that direction, turn here.
Yeah.
Consciously maybe didn't know it, but there was something that there was some sort of little trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And that our subconscious is always listening. It's an experience of when first-time parents bring a child home and that child is sound asleep and they're sound asleep. But the moment that baby moves or makes a sound, they're wide awake.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're, that part of them was listening because they want, they're so in tuned with that child. That part of them was listening even as they were sleeping, that when that child made a sound, they were immediately woken up.
Yeah.
So maybe there was something along your drive.
Yeah.
That said, hey, you know, our subconscious is kind of hyperly aware.
Yeah.
And it can be, it's a very good thing because it helps us survive.
Yeah.
It's always out there monitoring every system of our being and what's happening. You know, it's taking in millions of bits of information every second. But there is also a problem that can come along with that when the subconscious gets coupled with a survival experience. And when that survival experience happens, that's what we call trauma. So that subconscious is always on high alert, and that high alert state creates a awareness in the body that's sort of a hyper awareness, and it's exhausting for the person that's going through it.
Well, I can tell you, as far as the deja vu experiences, I have basically self-analyzed it down to this. They are nothing more than signposts along the way telling me I'm going in the right direction. I actually had a day, I think I was 7 years old, I had a day that kept going like that. And I thought I was going to go crazy.
Wow.
I mean, it was like, holy moly, what in the world? Every time I turned around, I've been here before. What's going on?
Sort of your own personal Groundhog Day.
it really was. But as I got older, I began to realize, and they happened less and less because I've taken the position that I believe that I've been in the right place at the right time the majority of my life. I've been fortunate in that respect. And so I don't need the signposts quite as much because I think I've developed that part of me, that intuitive part of me that says, yeah, you do need to go this way, follow the promptings, go this way and so forth and so on. And you don't need the confirmation and the encouragement from source to tell you, yeah, you're on the right path. You know you're on the right path, so you don't need that confirmation quite as often. We're going to continue on. I want to talk more about convergence healing with you, Peter. Peter Bedard is my guest, and we are talking here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we want you to stay right where you are.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for staying with us. And Peter Bittard, we are talking, Peter, about your book that's coming out spring of 2014. I find that hard to wrap my brain around. 2014. That is astounding to me that we are headed already in that direction. Although I remember thinking about this even as a kid, maybe that 7 or 8 year old, thinking because my birthday was, it fell on a decade, you know, born in 1960, and I'm always into patterns and stuff. And okay, when I'm in 1970, I'll be 10 and so on and so on and so on. And I thought, wow, in 2020, which, you know, you say is perfect vision, I'll be 60, you know. And of course, growing up watching cartoons, hoping that, oh, we'll have the Jetsons kind of life. And it's like, Nothing.
I'm still waiting for my suitcase that turns into my hovercraft.
Same here. I am doing the same. although I'm sure you've probably heard here in California about plans to create the equivalence of a giant pneumatic tube that will send you from Los Angeles to San Francisco in, I don't know, maybe 30, 40 minutes tops.
I've been reading about that. I think that's super exciting.
You know, it's like, well, could you, you know, the banks have been doing this for the last couple of three, four, five decades, giving you your stuff there of short distance from the building to the parking lot. So let's put a little more energy into it.
And, yeah, they said you can make it across country from Los Angeles to New York, and I think it was an hour and 20 or something like that.
That ain't bad. The plus side is, of course, that you're the only one in that tube at that time. The downside is you better be the only one in that tube at that time going in one direction. Otherwise, you're going to – we won't go there. But I do know that in the process of dealing with the healing arts in particular, it was never an area that I had chosen per se, not consciously anyway.
And you're a third-level Reiki master.
And I remember the first real experience in using it. Following my graduation, and my wife as well. She is also third level. We wanted to assist my father's brother who was dying of cancer. We knew the purposes of Reiki. We were told that this was not about our desire to heal this person. It was about sending them the energy that they needed to finish, to accomplish whatever it was that they wanted to accomplish.
Right.
So we asked for a photograph, and we were given the photograph, and we sat down in the living room, and I still remember this to this day, and we just sent the energy. And a few days later, we were told, of course, that my uncle had passed, and with no surprise, but then we were told the story of what happened over the last couple of days of his life, where he had enough energy, number one, to take his medications and throw them across the room saying, I don't want these. I don't need them anymore. Got into his wheelchair and rolled across the compound where he lived with his family. And his son lived in a house across the way. And he went there and I guess brought some closure to some things with his son. And I guess went back to bed and passed a day later. So he was able to finish the things that were important to him.
Right.
In terms of that. And I know that a lot of people, and I remember, of course, at the Christian radio station, hearing constantly how people wanted to be healed of this condition or that condition. But more than that, as I began to work there for 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 12, 15 years, wow. I began to hear the same people calling these prayer lines on the air over that period of time. And I thought, what is going on here? Why aren't they getting their healing that they've asked for? And then it dawned on me. It wasn't the healing that they were wanting. It was the connection, the human contact.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they were looking for more than anything else. Yes, they would love to be healed of their lumbago or their sore hip or whatever it was that they had. But if they didn't have that anymore, then they would have no reason to call. I know that that's a real big issue for a lot of people. They will use, even if it's, unconsciously, they will use that as a means to try to connect with other people.
Absolutely. And we do that on many different levels. I've found very, especially in family systems, very often you'll find someone that will be carrying a similar disease state as to a loved one. And it's almost a way that they feel closer or feel more connected energetically or emotionally or spiritually with that person. Every disease that I've ever had has benefited me. And even my being slammed into the back of a semi truck and having to learn how to walk again and the brain damage and stuff like that, every disease state I've ever had has benefited me. And my healing came about when I was able to understand what that benefit was and then try and find another way to get that benefit without having the disease. And so the convergence healing process is really the process for doing that sort of came in. That first step that I've already talked about was taking responsibility, stopping my need to look outside of me for someone else to come in and heal me. So I had to stop looking for someone else to be my savior, and I had to take absolute responsibility for me as I was at that time, good, bad, and ugly. And in doing that, I had to release the victim, because if I'm going to take responsibility for myself, then I can no longer be the victim to the guy that killed me. I can no longer be his victim, and I can no longer give him energy, and I had to take my life back. And so that first step was releasing, was taking responsibility. The second step was releasing the victim. And then the third step is, okay, I get I need to go through some healing. I get I need to do that. Now, how am I going to do it? Am I going to do it with great pain and effort and difficulty? Am I going to do it with a struggle? Or am I going to do it with effortless ease? And so I started setting the intention that I was going to go through this healing process, whether it was learning how to walk again, whether it was healing the brain damage or the arthritis, whatever it was, I was going to learn how to heal and bring that healing into my body and in my mind and my spirit. I was going to learn how to do that and do that with the greatest grace and ease. And I set that intention so that I could let go of the struggle. Because so many of us have these preconceived ideas, like I think what you had said in a way, the shoulds at the beginning, that I should be this way or I should be that way, or healing should be difficult. It should be painful. It should be a lot of work. And I challenge that and I say, well, why should it and does it have to? So those first three steps are really crucial, and they move us into the last, the second three steps. And the second three steps are really, and I ask people to do this. I don't care if it's a cancer, or I don't care if it's an arthritis issue. I don't care if it's a pain in the heart and a soul issue. Making that pain, that tumor, whatever it is, making that your best friend. Making the addiction, the anxiety, whatever it is, your best friend. Because when we make something our best friend, then we can have a relationship with it, and then we can ask it what it needs to heal. So there's no longer a need to beat it up, to kick it, to drug it, to poison it, to throw it away, to be embarrassed of it, ashamed of it, or angry at it. We now make it our best friend, and in that we ask it three questions, and that's step 4, 5, and 6. And that first question is, what is this part in you? What is this tumor? What is this addiction? What is this anxiety? Making it your best friend, talking to it and saying, what best friend do you need from me in order to heal on that body level? What do you need to heal on that body level? And then start to listen and see what it says. So for me, I had a real problem in my leg. I could barely walk. I was limping all the time. I had arthritis in my knee. And I had my leg rebuilt practically, and I had to tune into that part of me and that pain, and my leg actually told me it wanted to walk more, which was seemingly something the doctors told me I was not going to be able to do. And so, and I was in a lot of pain, so I had a lot of evidence in my body and in my heart that it was a painful experience to walk more. Yet my body, my leg, my pain was telling me it wanted to walk more. So I had to start walking more. And the more I walked, strangely enough, against what the doctors and everybody else told me, I had less pain. And so I said, all right, well, let's ask that second question. And the second question is, talking to that part, what does it need to heal on a mind level? And mind is thinking. Mind is awareness. So mind is that consciousness. What did it need to heal? And so for me, my leg, my pain told me that I had to stop thinking of myself as someone who was going to eventually have his knee replaced. I had to stop thinking of myself as a victim. I had to stop thinking of myself as somebody that was in pain, which meant that I couldn't plan my day like I used to before. You know, I used to plan my day around my projection of pain. So I had an experience in my life where I knew that my leg would eventually tire out. As the day got further on, I was going to be more and more tired, and I had to make sure I planned for that. And I had to protect myself from those experiences that would be too tiring. And so I had to stop thinking that way. And that was the mind challenge for me. The mind challenge was to start thinking differently. And the third step was spirit. And I had to ask that question of my leg, my body, and say, what do you need to heal on a spirit level? And for me, spirit was interesting enough. I was told I had to go outside and pull weeds in my garden. And in that place, when I did do that work, and I went out and I connected with the soil and I got my hands dirty and I had to kneel and bend and do all those things that were potentially painful, as I did those things and I connected with my sense of spirit, which I felt God out in the presence of my garden, all of a sudden all my pain started going away. And then I started to continue to ask those questions. Okay, well, that worked. Well, what else on a body level? What else on a mind level? What else on a spirit level? And that led me to doing different kinds of body work. It led me to do different kinds of spiritual or meditative practices, all of those type of things. And as well as, like, I found a prolotherapy, which was a cutting edge Western medical practice. And all of those things together, that convergence of those things coming together, have made it so that my leg is great. I don't need it replaced. In fact, I recently had x-rays, and the doctor I had never seen before looked at me and said, "What's wrong with your leg? Why are you even here?" And so I have no more arthritis, and everything's been perfectly healed. And that is that convergence, that coming together of all of those things that my body instructed me, that the pain instructed me to do in order for it to be healed. And so that's the process of convergence healing. It's stepping through those processes of taking responsibility, releasing the victim, setting my intention, and then understanding body, mind, spirit. What are those things that I need to engage in the world that are going to create my healing on all levels of my being?
You know, you outline this incredible process that can actually turn into the peeling of an onion, because when you heal one aspect, all right, you strengthen that other aspect. It seems as though in our human lives, then the dis-ease, as I'll phrase it, will then move to the next weakest part of the physical body. And then you heal that, and it continues to move until hopefully you get to a place where, you know, you really don't have any more concerns. You know, you're a fairly healthy, because I consider myself a fairly healthy individual. Mm-hmm. I had a similar situation almost a year ago. December 21st, 2012, I had knee surgery. It was, I believe it was arthroscopic, and they went in, and on my right knee, they took away a lot of the excess tissue from the ligament there, the meniscus. Mm-hmm. And it took me, I don't know, maybe 3-4 weeks tops to really be at what I could say would be 100%, which was great, because within a month, the 14th of February, as I was sharing at the beginning of our program, the Angus Report, we got this beautiful black puppy. He's a King Shepherd. He's going to be a big dog. And I often think back thinking, and if I hadn't had that surgery back then, I wouldn't be able to interact with this dog. It would be more of a struggle and a trial to deal with. Mm-hmm. And it's fabulous. It's incredible. So I'm, you know, and of course, like you, I even asked the orthopedist. I said, "Where am I in regards to maybe the need down the road for a knee replacement? If ever, maybe 20, 30 years, you right. know." And I'm hoping that the left knee stays well and healthy. But I also have to acknowledge, too, that my living arrangements changed. I no longer lived on a flat desert coming from Phoenix. I now live on a hillside overlooking Santa Barbara. Well, actually not overlooking it, but the valley behind. But it's hilly. And so there was more pressure put on that knee in particular. So it also means that it was already somewhat injured, but moving here and changing lifestyles and changing surroundings, you know, terrain, certainly exacerbated it. And maybe that was for the better, because it got it going faster so I could get through it quicker, because there are other things that I need to be doing other than sitting around being in pain.
Yeah.
You know, this is, to me, fascinating stuff. I am really, really excited about the fact that you're doing what you're doing. I'm curious about another aspect of the work that you're doing. When you work with the various people that you do on the various levels, whether it be for, say, cancer or other addictions, and in terms of reaching sobriety or smoking cessation and so forth, when, or even weight loss for that matter. And I've never been one who's ever been on a diet, never had to, never wanted to, never needed to. And yet at this time, and I'm certainly not overweight, 5-10 pounds, if I dropped it, it'd be great, you know, but I'm not, in a bad way. But I'm wondering, have you done any, I'm trying to think of the word I want to use here. Observations of your, I don't know if you call them clients or patients, but
sure.
As we are in the midst of our pain and suffering, it's kind of hard for us to get about the work that we're here to do, our purpose, right?
Right.
When these people manage to work their way to the other end of the tunnel, where now, I'm free of this. I can now go out and pursue my life's purpose. Have you been able to monitor in any way, shape, or form that next level for these people that you have been working with?
Sure. I get feedback all the time. People write reviews for me or send me testimonials all the time. Every now and then I hear from somebody I haven't heard from in a couple years, and they tell me how much their life has changed, or they got a referral, and then they send me a referral of someone who they were talking to so-and-so about their experience, and they come to me. So yeah, all the time.
And I'm sure that has to be quite gratifying.
It is. And you know what? This is just popping into my head a little bit, like a little intuitive nudge. Mm-hmm. You had talked about the weight thing.
Yeah.
And so just so people really understand sort of what it means to heal on a body, mind, spirit level, mm-hmm. There's several very popular weight programs on TV, right?
Oh, yeah.
these reality shows, that type of thing.
Yes.
Right? Uh-huh. If you notice on those programs, they really only work with people on one level of our existence, and that level is the body level.
Yes.
Right? They diet and they exercise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So and they have great success with that. But it's so sad to me when they show quite often, it seems like a large percentage, they visit these people maybe a year, 2 years later, and they put on all the weight and more.
Yeah.
And so this is true for cancer. This is true for weight loss. This is true for anything. When we only heal on that one level of our existence. So for weight, the problem is that they only healed on the body level. But the mind level still may think that they are that kid that nobody wanted.
Yes.
And so they still see themselves in their mind as the fat kid. And even though they look really good and they look really fit, in their mind, there's a dysmorphia type of issue where they see themselves as that fat kid. Then there's the spirit level. And on the spirit level, maybe that fat kid had a broken heart because he was made fun of in school and he was always picked last to be on a team. And so there's those two levels that still haven't been healed. So yes, the body's got it good, you know, the exercise, the diet, that type of thing. But generally, that weight is going to come back,
yeah.
And that cancer is going to come back,
yeah.
If the healing doesn't happen on the spirit and on the mind level and the thinking.
I remember doing interviews 20, 30 years ago in regards to the issue of weight gain. And people who back then, I don't think that was necessarily referred to as obesity. I don't think that word had come into vogue at that point, but nonetheless. And I was talking with therapists and psychologists and psychiatrists, and they were talking about how the reason why these people have put on so much weight is they are putting on, in essence, a protective layer.
Yeah, quite often. It's very, very often that is one of the possibilities.
Yeah.
There's lots of possibilities.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, but it's very common for people to put on weight to protect themselves.
Yeah.
For men, it's common to put on weight in order to increase their size, because if you're a bigger guy, then you're going to be messed around with less. For women, it's common to put on that shield of weight because it protects you from unwanted sexual advances.
Yeah.
And that's true for both men and women. It makes you less sexually appealing to the majority of the population if you're large and you're heavy than it would if you were fit and toned. And so if you've been abused or molested or there's been unwanted sexual advances – or you're insecure in your sexuality or your gender, the weight helps you protect yourself from that. And so you don't have to look at the issue, and people literally eat their pain.
You know, you have, I think, some great tools for people in regards to this whole convergence healing process. You have convergence healing workshops, of course, the book coming out in spring of 2014. You have convergence healing talks, and people can also get in touch with you directly in terms of maybe setting up an appointment to talk to you further about this. And as we're doing this interview, of course, we're using Skype, so obviously there's the opportunity as well. It's okay to give out your Yahoo email address?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's Peter Bedard at yahoo.com. That's PeterBedard at yahoo.com. What about this phone number that I have here?
Yeah, you're welcome to share it. It's on my website, and it's pretty okay. much all over the internet. I have 60 videos online too that people can watch that are really about my in how I healed myself and all the different people that I interviewed who I found as holistic practitioners that what they did was really interesting. And so I just started picking up a camera and shared all those interviews online with people. So the phone number is on that site as well.
And that's 323-384-8433. That's 323-384-8433. And by the way, I was watching one of those videos. And first of all, let me compliment you from a technical standpoint on those videos. They're worth watching, folks, because you're not distracted by the movement of stuff and that he's just being illuminated by his screen, his monitor of his computer, and he's being mic'd by the condenser mic and that kind of stuff. No, these are well done. I even share that critique with many guests on this program when I see some of their videos, and that's how they did it. The other way that is not as high a quality. And the only thing I can say in regard to those kinds of critiques in my defense, if you will, if someone's critical of my critiques, isn't your message important enough to produce it in a way that I can watch it and not have to even be thinking about that fact? Now, I know a lot of people are already used to that technique or that style, if you will, if you want to call it a style. But what you've produced is really nice. It's great information. The one gal that you have on your program, and you feature various healers as well who are in the business, if you will, in the life of helping others to heal. And yes. I think that's great.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that feedback. It's funny that to get that. So I'm actually looking at creating a couple guerrilla style videos, which would just be me turning on my laptop and taking the camera and just, you know, doing a couple sort of direct address type of things. So, but we did spend a lot of time on making these videos as something that's really accessible, easy to watch, and fun and well produced. So I really appreciate the feedback.
Sure. Well, and I honestly believe that, again, if you're going to, if it's a particular style you're looking for and what have you, that's fine. Okay. But when it comes to some of the messages that some of our guests have, and they're incredible, some of the stuff that they're wanting to impart, I'm distracted. I myself, and maybe it's just because I'm in the industry, if you will, that I become distracted. I can't sit here and watch, but I'm looking right now, a matter of fact, at this one screen with you and this gal, and it's today's featured episode, and I'm trying to – oh, here it is. Cast your very own gratitude spell.
Yeah, and that was such an amazing episode. Something I never thought I would have any kind of exposure to.
I thought it was really neat, and it's warm, and it's inviting, and it just draws you in because it's well produced in that regard. The scene has been set for you. You know, right. It's not hodgepodge, and you don't have a lot of distractions in the background and so forth. It does look like it was what, done in your home?
No, that was done in Patty's home. So Patty is she's a Wiccan, and she actually taught us how to cast a gratitude spell, and it was just a super cool experience. And funny enough that you bring that one up, because when we were doing that, the room filled with this tremendous positive light, awesome energy, and all of our batteries went out. The camera, as a tech guy, you get this. All of our batteries went out. The camera shut off. The microphones went down. We had to stop filming at one point, and we had these EMF readers on the table.
Yeah, I see those.
And those at one point go crazy while we're filming. They just, at the end of the entire interview, Patty and I say goodbye. We give each other a hug, and we just start chatting a little bit. And I'm expecting the camera lady to shut off the camera, and she just kept it rolling. And all of a sudden, the EMF readers just went nuts. They just started beeping and flashing, and it was the strangest experience. It was reading some sort of energy. You know, Patty is into the spiritual world, and she's a psychic and that type of thing. So Patty's understanding of it was that a presence had entered the room, and it was just such a wonderful, cool presence. And for it to wait the entire interview to do that after it shut down our cameras, after it did that type of stuff, was just super funny.
Oh, yeah. It's you just don't know what you're going to experience. I know I've had people who have at certain periods in their lives, they will have all kinds of problems with their computers, you know, mm-hmm. and they're going through turmoil or whatever it is they're going through. And when they get through that turmoil, it's like the problems with the computer go away. Ironically, though, they never make the connection. They don't realize right. that we are electromagnetic, if you will, machines. Mm-hmm. And we affect the electromagnetic machines that are around us, i.e. the computers. Mm-hmm. So if you're telling me, and of course I've had somebody tell me, well, wait a minute, but the computer is down the hall in the closet. And I say, it doesn't matter. They're connected by wires that carry the current, your current.
Yep, absolutely. You know, I mean, in the simplest form of understanding that is when you're at an event or a party or something and someone walks into the room and you either like the energy they're giving off or you don't like the energy they're giving off.
Yeah.
That there is an energy that we all walk around. You know, there was an interesting study I read a couple of years ago about the energy field of the heart, and they were trying to relate that to an auric type of field. But the electrical current of the heart can be measured up to 25 feet outside of the body.
Wow.
That's huge. That's 25 feet outside of the body, we can measure our electrical current.
That's a 50-foot circumference or a diameter.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm still working on trying to figure out how to use pi to determine those kinds of things. But oh, my gosh. Well, I have to say that, again, the work that you're doing, I think, is great. And we certainly encourage people to go to your website. And actually, you have two websites, if I'm not mistaken. CreateYourHealth.com is one of them. Yep. And what will they find there?
So createyourhealth.com is where I've consolidated all those videos. So there's 60-plus videos on the site. There are some older blogs on the site, and there's also my Healing Tea Store. So one of my missions in life is to – my sort of mission statement is to bring wellness into the world. And so everything I do needs to line up with that mission statement of bringing wellness. And I had an opportunity about a year ago, actually in September – where I had the opportunity to open up a healing tea store. And I created all these wonderful blends that are for helping people in taking advantage of the traditional healing qualities that the herbs, trees, roots, barks, flowers, leaves, all of that kind of stuff offer to us. So I created all these healing blends that, again, take advantage of those qualities. And those are in the store on the createyourhealth.com page. And we also, if anybody's local and they're downtown here in LA, we moved our store to a new location, and we're in this really awesome part of downtown Los Angeles. So that's what you'll find on the Create Your Health site.
And your other site?
And the other site is Peter Bedard Hypnotherapy. And so on that site, you'll find information about hypnosis, how hypnosis works, some of my background, some reviews of me that people have offered up that I put on the site as testimonials, and just the way to contact me.
Well, I'm glad that we made contact with you, and thank you so much for sharing your time and your energies with us here on Tell Me Your Story.
Well, thanks so much, Richard. It's always a pleasure to be on these things, and we're part of that tipping point, man.
Yeah,
we're creating that evolution.
Well, before we wrap up the program entirely, three more questions.
Okay.
Who is Peter Bedard.
I knew you were going to answer that. Ask that question. I've listened to your other shows. So Peter Bedard is on a mission. He's a man with a mission, and his mission is to bring wellness into the world. He is. My grandfather called me a lover, not a fighter, and that really defines who I am. I'm all about bringing a sense of wellness and understanding and acceptance and tolerance and hopefully beauty and wellness and healing into life. So that's who Peter Bedard is.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
I want people to understand that they have within them a power to heal. If they tune in and ask their parts, there's those things that are needing attention, what they need to heal, that they can do that.
And to that end, how powerful are we as human beings?
Ridiculously powerful, and I think we've only tapped into a part of it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again so much, Peter, for joining us. And again, createyourownhealth.com is the one website we encourage you to go to. You can check out the book as well. Convergence Healing, out in spring of 2014. And again, Peter Bedard's been my guest, M-A-C-H-T. And we hope we'll have you back on again in the coming days. And if you find yourself down up here in the Santa Barbara area from Los Angeles, love to have you in studio, and we'll do another interview.
I would love to have an excuse to come up to Santa Barbara, so that'd be a blast.
Well, you have one now.
All right, awesome. Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.